Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Critics of a bipartisan bill aiming to tweak Florida's Stand Your Ground law say a new provision will hurt the state's prosecutors.
It's good for the defendants. They would be 100% for it. And so this law is a godsend to drug dealers, gang members, and public defenders.
Also tonight, a push to limit baccalaureate degrees may be a lukewarm idea in the House, but is gaining steam in the Florida Senate.
I think it's possible that we've had some mission creep beyond that.
We'll also have stories about the child visitation rights of grandparents, a busy day for Florida's senators, and find out why Florida's capital city was awash in not only lawmakers and lobbyists, but also National Football League scouts today. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Last night we left you with a promise we'd have the latest developments on a move to modify Florida's controversial Stand Your Ground law this evening, and we will not leave that pledge unfulfilled. State attorneys say they're against Florida's Stand Your Ground law. At least one of those prosecutors says he's also dead set against the so-called bipartisan tweak bill now moving forward in the Senate. As Sasha Cordner reports, he's railing against an NRA-backed provision in the bill that he insists would make a bad policy a lot worse. Meanwhile, there are worries the issue may cause a squabble among legislative Republicans.
Tallahassee State Attorney Willie Meg says he opposes Stand Your Ground because Florida residents no longer feel they have the duty to retreat in a situation that could call for it.
Well, this law says, oh no, you don't have a duty to do it. If you feel like you got to, you kill them. You kill them. And trust me, they are. People are following the law. They're standing their ground.
He says the law is even worse if it contains an amendment recently tacked onto a bill that would modify the controversial law. Altamont Springs Republican Senator David Simmons and Senate Democratic Leader Chris Smith are pushing that amendment. It allows an innocent bystander caught in the crossfire of someone defending themselves to sue that person. It also provides that neighborhood watch programs be administered by local law enforcement and includes a rule that neighborhood watchers cannot pursue a suspected wrongdoer. Law enforcement must also fully investigate Stand Your Ground claims, and it further clarifies that a person who provokes the use of force can't use the Stand Your Ground defense. However, during its last stop at the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, it was a change in what happens during an immunity hearing that upset Megs the most. Currently, if someone claims self-defense before they can go before a jury, they must go before a judge and prove their claim is justified. But in Simmons' latest bill, that burden of proof is now placed on the prosecutor, a provision that Gainesville public defender Stacy Scott likes.
This burden is already on the state at trial. They must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not act in self-defense when the defendant raises the affirmative defense of self-defense at a trial. So this bill corrects a confusing shift of the burden from the defense in pretrial hearing to the state at trial.
But State Attorney Meg says if the burden is not met, the case can get dismissed before it can go to a jury.
It is an immunity statute. The judge would rule, I find that you're immune from prosecution for your conduct, and we're dead ducks.
He says it's also unfair to subject prosecutors to this new standard that's not seen in other much similar hearings in Florida.
Under insanity, if you're claiming you're insane, you have to prove that you're insane. You have the burden to prove you're insane. We don't have the burden to prove that you're sane. In alibi, if you claim a affirmative defense of alibi, you have to prove your alibi. We don't have to disprove your alibi. You have to establish it and prove it. So why in the world do we have this one law where the burden is on the state to prove that a person was not standing their ground?
But Senator Simmons, the bill sponsor, says it is fair because it's something state attorneys already have to do.
And when the prosecutors claim that somehow or the other that this is unfair, it's not unfair. It's the same standard that they have at the time of the trial.
The National Rifle Association also backs that part of the amendment, and so does Ocala Republican Representative Dennis Baxley, who helped write the 2005 Stand Your Ground law. He says it helps to make the bill a bit more attractive.
So I think that's an important standard in criminal justice, that you're innocent until proven guilty, and the burden of proof should be on the prosecutors. So I think that could improve those hearings.
And speaking as chair of the House Judiciary Committee, which oversees the respective criminal justice committees that would take up the bill, Baxley says the measure may not be dead in his chamber. They're just waiting to see what happens in the Senate.
And I think they've actually probably happened on a couple of things that are very good. And we're just going to wait and see what they do with it. We can always take up the Senate bill eventually. So we're going to let that play out its course, and I'll stay in a discussion with Speaker, and there may be something we pick up that's improves the bill.
Meanwhile, the Senate bill has two more committees to go before it heads to the floor. While it passed its last committee unanimously, Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley voted against the amendment because he, too, shares the state attorney's concerns. Simmons says he's working with the Florida Prosecutors Association to try and iron out their concerns. He's also working with law enforcement, who feel the current language in the bill regarding overseeing neighborhood watch programs holds them liable. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The State Board of Education has approved several new bachelor's degree programs at what were formerly known as community colleges. Lynn Hatter reports the approval comes as some lawmakers look to restrict the board's authority to approve those programs.
Florida College System Chancellor Randy Hanna took pains to outline the process community and state colleges go through when considering a new baccalaureate program. He told the State Board of Education Tuesday how the colleges go about applying for new four-year programs. It starts with a study on local workforce needs to see whether a program is necessary, and it goes from there.
They submit a letter of intent. That letter of intent is then sent to all of the universities and other colleges in the area. The other colleges and universities are given an opportunity to present an alternative proposal.
One by one, the State Board of Education approved each of the three requests for bachelor's degree programs before it, starting with Eastern Florida State College.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, passes.
Both Florida Gateway College and Santa Fe College proposals for new baccalaureate programs were also approved. The State Board of Education has never rejected a community or state college's bid for a new program. And in the past 8 years, about 100 new bachelor's degree programs have sprung up at the schools. But the proliferation of new programs has frustrated some lawmakers like Republican Senator Bill Galvano of Bradenton, who has opened the door to blocking the state board's approval of bachelor's degrees. Galvano says he's worried community and state colleges are overstepping their bounds and becoming too focused on baccalaureate programs when they were created to produce associate degrees and prepare students to transfer into the state's universities. That echoes an earlier call by Republican Senator Joe Negron, who first raised the issue, and they're not the only senators who feel that way.
I think it's possible that we've had some mission creep beyond that.
Senate President Don Gates says he thinks it's worth taking a look at.
Where we've had some community colleges who become state colleges,
who are offering degree programs that seem to them to be a good idea, and maybe are a good idea, but might not be as closely lashed to the economic needs and the job market needs of the region as perhaps the architects of four-year degrees in community colleges had envisioned.
And Gates says that sort of review should also extend to Florida's public universities as well.
By the same token, it's very important that we look at universities and ask the question, are we getting as much value out of these great institutions as we could get?
The colleges say baccalaureate degrees only make up about 4% of their total enrollment, and that their overall mission remains on associate degrees and getting students to transfer into the universities. Through a spokesman, House Speaker Will Weatherford says he'll take a look at whatever the Senate sends over, but there is no comparable language in the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida's legislative leaders are responding to public outrage about a series of child deaths in Florida last year, and not just in the policy arena. They're also talking about spending more money on the state's troubled child welfare system. Committees have been studying child welfare since back in September. They've come up with some complex legislation, which touches a dozen different concerns, from safety planning to death reviews. But today, as the Miami Herald continued its investigation into the children's deaths, legislative leaders were also talking about money. Senator Eleanor Sobol, chairwoman of the Senate Committee on Children, Families, and Elder Affairs, was among them, and Senate President Don Gates was too. And the House Healthy Families Subcommittee, which had planned to vote on a far-reaching child welfare reform bill today, put that off for a week. Most child deaths are caused by parents who abuse drugs and alcohol, and critics have long called for the state to fund more substance abuse and mental health treatment programs. Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida lawmakers walk a thin constitutional line in their efforts to give grandparents the legal right to visit their grandchildren.
The Florida Constitution is even stronger than the U.S. Constitution as far as a parent's right to parent their children.
The question for Florida senators: can insurance companies charge gun owners higher rates if it's determined those folks are at higher risk?
Nothing in this bill would preclude an insurance company from charging an actuarially appropriate rate.
And we'll discover why there were so many NFL scouts in Tallahassee today.
I think it gets in a little more relaxed setting, and I personally think you see more of the guy who he really is because he's in an atmosphere and environment that he's used to.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment.
There's an old saying, grandparents have the God-given right to see and spoil their grandkids. Many Floridians would agree grandparents play an important role in a child's life. But should they be able to push their way in when parents don't want them there? Regan McCarthy reports that's the topic of a bill lawmakers heard today.
Florida lawmakers have worked before to ensure grandparents could visit their grandchildren.
And the court basically said because we have a privacy right in our Florida Constitution that it violates a natural parent's fundamental right to privacy in rearing his or her child to give grandparents equal rights in determining custody decisions.
That's Florida State University law professor Ruth Stone. She oversees the school's family law clinic. Stone says the U.S. Supreme Court has also ruled on the issue, which she says is unusual in a family law case. But a group of lawmakers is working to find a way around those rulings with legislation this year. Wellington Democratic Senator Joseph Abruzzo is sponsoring one such bill. He says it will help grandparents like Yvonne Stewart.
You know I'm going to cry. I can't help it.
Stewart says she's been fighting for years now to visit two of her grandchildren. But when it comes to the legal system, she doesn't have much hope.
No one in Florida can ask to visit their grandchildren because there's no law that says I can.
During a Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee Tuesday, Stewart told the story of her daughter who disappeared and her daughter's ex who has custody of her children and, she alleges, a violent and criminal history. Abruzzo says his bill could clear up Stewart's troubles. He says Stewart's grandchildren are currently living in Tennessee.
And Tennessee is one of the 35 states that have grandparent visitation rights on the books. And they've replied to us saying that they would work with the state of Florida if we had a similar law so they can see their children.
Abruzzo's bill gives grandparents visitation rights in limited circumstances. First, the child's parents must either both be dead, or one parent must be dead, missing, or in a vegetative state, and the other parent must have a violent or criminal past. Plus, the grandparent must show the living parent is either unfit or could cause harm to the child. Stetson University law professor Cynthia Hawkins DeBose says the narrow language is an attempt to get around the previous constitutional issues.
By looking at the harm to the child as opposed to the best interest of the child, because past legislation had the standard that grandparental visitation would be awarded if the child's best interests were met, the best interests of the child standard were met.
Hawkins DeBose says the measure is similar to one already in place in Montana that's been found by the state Supreme Court to meet constitutional muster. The bill also puts provisions in place to stop grandparents from harassing parents through frequent filings and expands the definition of next of kin to great-grandparents, so great-grandparents can get visitation before a child who's become a ward of the state gets adopted. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski joins us on Capitol Report. The Florida Senate, a busy place today, including one piece of legislation that Governor Rick Scott really wanted to see, and the House and Senate leadership did too, Stan.
They certainly did. The Senate today passed one part of the governor's $500 million tax rollback proposal that he's hinging his reelection campaign on. This is the bill that rolls back all of the fees that were increased a few years ago on vehicle registrations. The average person's going to get back somewhere between about $13 and $25 on their vehicle registration. And it was interesting, Senator Joe Negron, who's been championing this bill, said people have even been following him around Tallahassee somewhat and asking him, when can I possibly get this tax rebate? Here's what he said this morning.
I've had a number of constituents ask me in Publix as I've been working around town. They're literally holding on to these bills, and they're waiting for this to pass. And they want to know the date.
And that date is September 1st, should this bill pass. It's on the House session calendar for tomorrow, for Wednesday, and it's likely to pass there as well and head to the governor's desk. He is sure to sign it if it gets there, as, of course, he's been out campaigning for it.
Senators also diving into something called revenge porn that has a very lascivious kind of sound to it. What's that all about, Steve?
So this has a very, very ominous name, and it is an ominous sort of thing. This is something that has been talked about a lot. And basically what this is if you are – imagine you're in a relationship with somebody and you take video or photos of that person in a compromising situation. You don't disclose those photos until after this relationship is ended, and you do so in a manner that is meant to hurt that other person or their reputation. Well, now there's going to be a law potentially that would ban that sort of activity and make it of a criminal nature. But there was an interesting discussion about the ages involved here, and it's a different crime if you are both adults versus if one person's an adult and the second person, the victimized person, is a minor. And there had been an ongoing discussion between Jacksonville Senator Audrey Gibson and bill author David Simmons. And what Simmons wanted to do was say, all right, anyone 18 years or older was someone who was could be charged with revenge porn against a minor. And there was a little bit of a discussion about, do we say it's someone who is 18 years old or someone who's older than 18, which is what Audrey Gibson wanted. Well, that became the amended version of the bill this morning. The problem with that is it makes it a little ambiguous. Technically, the day after your 18th birthday, you are older than 18 years of age. And so what does the language actually mean? And I suspect there is a chance to have some more discussion about the ages involved with the people who are part of this activity as this goes along.
As long as we're talking about semantics, here's an interesting combination of words: guns and insurance. What happened in the Senate relative to that combo today?
So this has been a bill that, for instance, Matt Gaetz in the House has been behind, and it was taken up on the Senate floor this morning. And it actually was the only bill in the entire Senate session that found some no votes this morning. Three Democratic senators, Geraldine Thompson, Chris Smith, Arthenia Joyner, voted against this bill. And basically what it does is it lets insurance companies off the hook a little bit. It takes them somewhat out of the equation. And the Senate was concerned that people who owned guns could be predatorily taken advantage of by insurance companies. Insurance companies could say, ah, you own a gun, Tom? Well, we're going to charge you a higher insurance rate because you own a gun. And Tom Lee, the senator who is championing this bill, was a little frustrated this morning when he explained that that's not, in his mind, what the bill does.
Nothing in this bill would preclude an insurance company from charging an actuarially appropriate rate if it could be shown through competent actuarial data that due to the ownership of a firearm, insurance costs are higher. It would not be discriminatory in accordance with the rating law, and the Office of Insurance Regulation can underwrite to that data.
And so what Senator Lee is clearly trying to say there is that we're not going to discriminate against you just because you own a gun. We can't do that. What we have to have is actuarially sound data. And actuarial tables are these things that risk management firms keep to say, all right, we've got all these different characteristics, all these different variables and factors we can figure in to figure out how much of a risk you are. Are you a good risk? Are you a bad risk? And now it's incumbent upon these risk-taking and risk management firms to say, all right, if someone's got a gun, what does that do for their risk factor? And now you're going to have this interesting situation where it's incumbent upon the actuarial firms who are pitting themselves in some ways against the Republican-controlled legislature and the National Rifle Association, who have backed this bill. If the actuarial firms come out and say, we have these tables, and then they show clearly that having firearms in the home makes it more dangerous, you can bet we're going to revisit this discussion.
Another interesting combination, politics and actuarial tables. We'll see how that plays out. Florida Public Radio, Stan Jastrzebski, following the action in the Senate today. Thanks, Sid.
Thank you, Tom.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Now here's Ronald J. Eben and a few of the key meetings on the schedule at the Florida Capitol tomorrow.
The State Clemency Board meets at 9 a.m. Wednesday. The board to consider dozens of cases stemming from felonies committed in the 1970s and 1980s. Meanwhile, the Florida Rights and Restoration Coalition and PICO United Florida will hold a march and news conference prior to the Clemency Board meeting, calling on Governor Scott and cabinet members to restore the civil rights of people convicted of felonies who have served their time. The march starts at 8:45 with the First Presbyterian Church on North Adams. At 9:30, the House Economic Development and Tourism Committee will discuss a bill to provide an exemption for sales taxes on items related to hurricane preparedness. A parasailing bill goes before the Senate Community Affairs Committee at 11 a.m. The bill by Senator Maria Sachs would place regulations on the parasailing industry. The bill comes after several high-profile parasailing accident, including an incident in Panama City Beach, but injured two young women. The House goes into session at 5 p.m. Among the bills on the agenda, a code of student conduct and a reduction of the taxes and fees for motor vehicle registration and license plates. And those are some of the happenings at the Capitol for Wednesday, March 19th. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally, we end tonight's Capitol Report speaking of sports, with apologies to the late Howard Cosell. Most college football powerhouses have some variant of Pro Day. That's a last chance for pro team scouts to check out the available talent before the NFL draft. Nick Evans reports that occasion becomes more frenzied than usual when the players under the microscope belong to the team that just snagged a national championship.
I'm at the Florida State Indoor Practice Field. 100 or so team representatives are milling around watching a group of defensive players run their drills. The NFL brings new players into the league each year through a 7-round draft. But before the draft, scouts, coaches, and other staff members get a couple of chances to meet and evaluate prospective players. Pro Day is one of the last of these events on the way to the draft, and Florida State coach Jimbo Fisher says it offers a unique opportunity for the players.
I think it gets in a little more relaxed setting, and I personally think you see more of the guy who he really is, because he's in an atmosphere and environment that he's used to, and he's comfortable, and it's really the same thing as the combine. You're just doing it in an environment where I'm comfortable and not where everybody's in one central location. And I think you don't see as many nerves and things as you would see at a combine.
Throughout the day, players participate in drills testing their speed, strength, and agility. Right now, Brian Stork is doing bench press. Players participating here will lift 225 pounds as many times as they can. Stork lifted it 21 times. FSU has a number of prospects that are likely to be drafted, and for most of them, this will be their last chance to impress teams. Devontae Freeman says he's been looking forward to this moment for a long time.
A long time. This is my dream. Just since I started loving football, and that was since I was really young. Man, it's like a dream come true that knowing that I'm almost there, and I'm almost for to get drafted. So I just thank God. It's just a humbling moment for me.
Now all these players can do is wait until May and hope they find a spot on a team. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans in Tallahassee.
And in the spirit of fairness and even-handedness, we also wish much success to the players from all of Florida's collegiate squads who might also have a chance to advance to the pros. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank and Nick Evans. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.